A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke. Each year, Jesus' parents went to Jerusalem for the feast of the Passover. And when he was 12 years old, they went up according to festival custom. After they had completed its days, as they were returning, the boy Jesus remained behind in Jerusalem, but his parents did not know it. Thinking that he was in the caravan, they journeyed for a day and looked for him among their relatives and acquaintances. But not finding him, they returned to Jerusalem to look for him. After 3 days, they found him in the temple, sitting in the midst of the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. And all who heard him were astounded at his understanding and his answers. When his parents saw him, they were astonished. And his mother said to him, "Son, why have you done this to us? Your father and I have been looking for you with great anxiety." And he said to them, "Why were you looking for me? Did you not know that I must be in my father's house?" But they did not understand what he said to them. He went down with them and came to Nazareth and was obedient to them. And his mother kept all these things in her heart. And Jesus advanced in wisdom and age and favor before God and man. The Gospel of the Lord. Well, on the Sunday after Christmas, we always celebrate the feast of the Holy Family of Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. Not our holy families, no, because we're not so holy. Oh, but we celebrate this as kind of the family that we're supposed to emulate, and try to be like more and more. And gosh, I suppose we all fall way short. I guess that's to be expected, because our families aren't so perfect. They're kind of messy. We have all sorts of issues, no? Yeah, it's certainly true in my family, too. My parents did their best to get the faith across to us all, and more or less it stuck with my brothers and sisters. But I'm sure I'm the only one in a bunch of generations that ever thought of being a priest. I'm sure all my cousins didn't occur to them. And then the next generation, it's always hard to pass on the faith, as all of you know, especially in the culture and the society we're living in today. It's a big challenge for parents to do that. Yeah. It seems to be, superhuman task. But I see so many, beautiful examples of people in the parish that are doing their best to raise their kids in the faith and caring for each other and, facing situations with elderly parents or relatives or people who are sick or out of work, and they're doing their best to rally around them and be family for them, even with all the imperfections that they have and sometimes the tensions and the division that comes in. Somebody said, a good definition of family is those are the people that take you in when nobody else wants you, right? They're your last resort, and that's certainly true. But today, this feast, I don't think the church gives us this feast day just to make us feel incompetent and useless and failures. It's to spur us on to trying to be better families for each other. And each of us working on ourselves to be just that little bit holier and a little bit more forgiving and a little bit more charitable if we can. And I think that's the challenge we have to take up, because we can all improve, especially in not letting grudges drag on or resentments, but to learn to forgive a little bit better. Because if our families are strong, then our whole society will be stronger and we'll be happier as well. And we should be building each other up in faith rather than tearing it down. And I think the three readings today are really good that way. The first one from the first book of Samuel. You remember Samuel was one of the great prophets from the Old Testament. And Samuel was the answer to a prayer by his mother Hannah, who couldn't conceive a child. And she prayed and prayed. She went to Eli, the priest, and she prayed for a child, and he blessed her. And then she came back a year later, and she had a child. You know, so first of all, it reminds us that every child is an answer to a prayer of someone, right? And that every child's a gift as well. You know, where our culture kind of teaches us that children are a burden. No. Every month or two, I see articles in the paper about how the cost of raising children has become impossible. You know, a kid is going to cost you $3 million by the time they get out of college, or by the time they finally move out of the house when they're 40 or 50 or whenever it is, you know, these days. And so it's so discouraging, you know, like, well, who would have a kid? No, that kind of cost, you got to be Elon Musk. He's got 10 or 11, right? But he's also got $400 billion. Every child's a gift, right? Because every child, despite all the hassles and sacrifices you make, they represent God, right? And God is giving each parent, you know, a responsibility and trusting you with one of his creatures. You know. Yesterday we had three baptisms here. And I always like to remind the parents that what's happening here isn't just a little ceremony. You know, sometimes we call it a christening. That's what they call it when they commission a new ship in the Navy, right? They smash a bottle of liquor on the side of the ship and push it out into the sea. Well, that's not what we do with a kid. No, but christening is the right word. It's becoming Christ-like, right? When a child is baptized, it isn't just a little ceremony so you can have a party and dress the kid up nicely. Right? That child, through that baptism, is transformed and changed and now becomes a child of God. And that's what St. John's reminding us in his letter there today is, brothers and sisters, we are already children of God, and what we will be has not yet even been revealed. Also, from the moment of that baptism, that child belongs to God. And now is transformed spiritually in his soul into a member of the family of God. That's awesome. And the parents are given the responsibility to make sure that that life of Christ grows in that child. I mean, that's the most awesome responsibility you could ever have, is to take responsibility for the faith of that child and make sure it grows and is nurtured and develops. That's a huge responsibility. I always try to scare the godparents and the parents. Say, like, do you know what you're doing? You're making a vow here right in front of Jesus Christ that you're going to safeguard this child into heaven. And that when the godparents usually run out, you know, leave, you know, at that point. But, oh, they get scared. But it's really true. We take responsibility for each other. In the case of Hannah, she saw this little Samuel as a gift from God. And what she did was go back to the temple, back to Eli. And she gave the child back to be raised in the temple, to be a priest and a prophet. And she brought a flask of wine and some flour, just in case the child wasn't enough. No, you know, we get that sometimes. People leave kids here at the church, you know. It's usually parents forgetting to pick them up after CCD. But if they'd send a bottle of wine and some flour, we might take them. But we don't do that too much anymore. But the idea of giving a child back to God, no, it's such a beautiful thing, because you receive that gift and you give it back to God It's like a stewardship of all we have. What a beautiful thing that is, no? And I think parents have a responsibility to foster the vocation of their children. You know, I never thought of being a priest when I was a kid. But one time when I was about 10 or 11 or 12, I forget, my mother said to me, you know, if you ever wanted to be a priest, I would do anything to help you become a priest. It came out of the blue. I didn't see it coming. But I never forgot it. No, I never forgot. It was in the back of my head. You know, even when I was messing around and getting in trouble, I still remembered that. And it was like a prophecy on the part of my mother. Oh, to give a child back to God, beautiful thing. You know, and St. John reminds us of the dignity it is to be entrusted with the responsibility for another person. And I think that's what families are entrusted with, responsibility for each other. We're not just random individuals that happen to be connected by biology. No, that we share genes. No, there's something more to it. You know, because our families, as imperfect as they are with all their faults and flaws, somehow we reflect that family of Jesus, you know, Mary and Joseph. Yeah, we are far from that holiness. When we come to the gospel, we see this little scene, one of the very few scenes we get into the life of Jesus. I'm sure if each one of us could rewrite the gospels, we'd write a lot more stories about Jesus as a little kid. But I always loved this because I always saw it, you know, when I was small, I remember reading this story and saying, like, hey, Jesus, he snuck away from his parents and got away with it for 3 days, you know. I thought that was so cool because I could see myself doing that, you know. And hoping that they wouldn't find me. No. But he was there in the temple. And they finally figured out to go where to go look for him. And some scripture scholars say that Jesus did this because he really saw himself like Samuel, the prophet who was raised in the temple. And that his vocation was to be there among the priests and the doctors of the law. And he saw himself very much in the footsteps of Samuel. Maybe there's something to that. And that Jesus intended to stay there. Which means what comes afterwards is so significant. That Mary kind of scolds him, you know, and says, we've been looking for you with such anxiety. And it says, then he went back to Nazareth with them and was obedient and grew in wisdom and grace before God and man. No. Yeah, it would make a lot of sense if that were the right interpretation. That, yeah, Jesus, even the Blessed Mother had to form him and kind of shape his vocation. That it wasn't for him to be in the role of Samuel, but for him to live that hidden life in Nazareth for those 30 years and then go out on his mission. Whatever it was the Blessed Mother that was shaping and forming Jesus. If you can imagine that, here he is, the Son of God, but now he's made man, and he needs to be taught. I think that's a mystery that's just awesome. You know? And it just highlights the role of mothers and fathers. You know? St. Joseph doesn't say anything in the Gospels, but he was there as a silent, patient example for Jesus. And Jesus maybe learned that, okay, I've got to wait another 18 years or so before I start my public life, and this is time to go on learning and praying and learning how to work, learning the real lot of the average person before I go out in public and preach. I think it's so rich there that he was obedient to them, and it says so much about, you know, the way we are today, our independence and our self-assertion, that's who we are. Oh, that's fostered by our society so much. And yet, the old-fashioned family values of interdependence and living together and being together and depending on each other are so important. And the Holy Family shows us that. They didn't have much. If you ever go to Nazareth, you see how simple little town was, and and you see how Jesus grew up in what was a little town of maybe 100 families, nothing there. And it was kind of ridiculed by people at the time. But that's where Jesus was formed, in an ordinary household, in an ordinary town. And that's where the values came across to him. I think any of us can do that. In that way, we can imitate the Holy Family too.